Good morning, everyone. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10 o'clock a.m., Wednesday, July 8th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Crisman. So we do have a quorum. And, of course, we had a number of storms rolled through the area, the region, last night. And the one thing I want to give a shout-out to would be the utility line workers in the state who are on call 24/7, 365 days a year, whether it's an ice storm, whether it's a windstorm like we experienced last night along with the heavy rain across much of the region. When power lines go down, those individuals are out regardless of the conditions, and they do a fantastic job to restore power. That's just the reality. Storms will at times cause power outages, but they do an outstanding job, as well as the representatives that are on the telephone line, are on the phones to take calls when these things do occur. So a big, big thank you and a shout out to all of those individuals for the work that they do. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I thought I would make a couple observations on the Dakota Access decision from earlier this week. Not because it relates to the work that we've done or our permit, but because of the work that we've done and the time that we've spent on this, we're so intimate and in our knowledge of that pipeline and a lot of the same regulatory issues that were at play on the federal level in this particular appeal. And so I have some pretty serious concerns about the decision. First of all, I and I know my colleagues have long respected since day one and shared the concerns that the tribe have on this issue, and that is on the water quality and the impacts, potential impacts of a spill on the Missouri River. And we've spent literally hours understanding the technology that the project would employ and in construction and in terms of detection and response, all of those things on the entire 300-mile span through North Dakota we looked at very closely. So we share those concerns, and they were part of our permitting process too. But where I have concerns on this latest decision is how it kind of undermines the regulatory review process that exists on the federal level. First of all, the permitting agency, which was the Corps, they permitted and approved the use of the EA on the first go-around for the company. And so they approved the permit based on the environmental assessment. And then the project was completed and operational in early 2017 with that permit in place. So 3 years later then, after this is in operation, the judge reviews that and says, no, the EA wasn't appropriate. You need to do the EIS. Okay, that's a decision you can argue with or not. It's a significant change for the company, and that has been operating it for, you know, three full years, and so there's significant requirements to go into it. To go the next step, then, and shut the issue down is where I think it's just over the top. The order to vacate is based on two factors in law. This is from his opinion. The seriousness of the original core order's deficiencies and the disruptive consequences of the vacature. And so that where I think he really fell short was on the second piece, the disruptive consequences of vacature. He hung his hat on this notion that the Corps could complete the EIS in 13 months. That is very optimistic, in my opinion, very, very unlikely. Secondly, he significantly underestimates the systems that are in place to avoid, detect, and respond to a spill. Basically shows complete misunderstanding on the worst-case spill scenario and what the company has to do to prepare for that. That isn't even in the Missouri River. That spill would be at a tank farm and they have to be prepared to respond to a spill of one of their largest tanks erupting and spilling in a matter of seconds, and they have to be prepared for that the entire stretch of the line. That is a lot of preparation. So, I mean, the fact that that exists and is in place and was unrecognized, I think, is a huge error. And then he grossly underestimates the impacts of the shutdown on thousands of oil industry employees, service industries, small businesses, communities in North Dakota, three affiliated tribes, and our entire state. And so I'm pleased to know that the state is probably going to be enjoining in an amicus brief on the appeal. And I just think, you know, we have to respect regulatory processes in this country and decisions of regulatory agencies. Yes, the appeal process is important too. And if the courts, though, are going to require additional and different regulatory processes, I feel that it's only reasonable to do so in a way that minimizes the disruption on the businesses who have been operating under the previous scheme that was approved by the regulatory agency. And then, and to do so that in a way that minimizes the impact of this new requirement while allowing those requirements to be fulfilled and that process to undergo. So I will, like everybody else, be watching really closely in the next couple of months to see what happens with this. It has huge, huge implications for our industry in North Dakota, but for every industry in this country that rests on regulatory decisions at the federal level in order to make investments. So this is not just a one-and-done thing. This has big ramifications long-term, and it needs to be done in a way that is fair and reasonable and right for our country long-term. So that's it for my opening comments.
All right, Commissioner Chrisman.
The only opening comments that I planned were if there was anything to add on that same subject, and I assume there would be very little, and I'm not surprised. There is very little to add. That was, I think, a well thought out and a good explanation of a terrible situation we're in. Probably the only two things I would add is, and I'm sure to a large extent it's coincidence, but it just seems like it's a full-scale assault on energy infrastructure with this, with the recent announcement on the Keystone construction, and the last phase on, I can't think of the name of the pipeline, but that one down in North Carolina and Virginia that were, they've just given up. There's just the things that we're seeing happening this week with Keystone and Dakota Access has happened for so long in that case, they've just given up. We just won't have energy infrastructure, I guess, because it's made impossible by a few rogue judges. And so that's really disappointing. But the one detail, and you mentioned the state as a whole when you mentioned the three affiliated tribes and the company and other associated companies taking really hard hits on this, but by state as a whole, I just want to emphasize one group that you kind of covered it with that, but I think has been left out of this discussion, and that's our ag producers in the state that have been keeping North Dakota going for more than a century. And we can all recall the situation that we were in before Dakota Access, where farmers were taking a huge hit because the people who buy their product were competing with the oil companies for rail service. And then it extended another step where, you know, not so much in the larger cities where, you know, maybe the railroads built up better with their infrastructure, but in small towns all over the state where they'd be having train delays and such, where trains have to wait for other trains to pass, and in the meantime, traffic is cut off. It was a dreadful situation. And now, if this judge's order, first of all, I don't know how you can totally shut down that pipeline that quickly, but if they are able to, right as harvest starts in the Midwest, we're going to put a bunch of additional oil traffic on the rail and compete with our egg producers for that rail space. It is just shocking and dreadful. And you summarized it well, but I just wanted to emphasize the egg production side of it, that it's going to take a huge hit on this deal if they're not successful in getting it appealed or delayed here.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. I was actually going to wait on my comments, but I think now is the appropriate time to echo some of the things I've said on the air on several different radio stations over the past several days. So I'm going to just reiterate a few of those points. I'm also disappointed in the decision made by the district court judge. And I think it's important for people to realize that this is about a federal judge disagreeing with the process that a federal agency implemented, conducting an EA versus an EIS. And this is clearly a difference of opinion between the two federal entities. So the company, as well as then upstream oil producers, mineral right owners in the state, are now the ones who, if the shutdown occurs on August 5th, they are the ones that are in effect punished for something that they had no control over. And the EA was conducted by the Army Corps of Engineers for the reason, and the difference between an EA and an EIS goes back to the likelihood of environmental damage. The Corps reviewed the fact that there were shutoff valves on both sides of the river, that the pipe was bored under the riverbed at a significant depth. I don't remember the exact depth. I want to say 92 feet. So there is a highly sophisticated shutoff system in place, a monitoring system, the SCADA system, that's watching for deviations in pressure. And if something did happen at that particular crossing, it would quickly be shut down, and the odds that oil would reach the surface are extremely low, or get into the water supply would be extremely low. That would be drained quickly. And again, the likelihood of that happening with this type of technology in place, this is a high-tech pipeline, is incredibly low. The economic impact in North Dakota will be significant without Dakota Access in operation. When you have low commodity pricing, as we currently do, WTI is right around $40 a barrel. When you take into account the added shipping costs and the discount that Bakken producers have to deal with, we will see even fewer drilling rigs going in the northwest part of the state, which will impact jobs. It will impact revenues, not only for those communities and that part of the state, but for the entire state. We're facing revenue challenges right now due to COVID. And to layer this on top of that could have dire consequences for how we fund programs in the state, including educational programs and including social programs. So I understand the concern that if a spill were to occur, I do understand the tribe's concern, but at the same time, we're trading one type of risk, low in likelihood, with low probability, for a greater risk in terms of what this means to traffic on roadways, tanker cars going through our communities across the state as well as in other states as this oil moves to market by rail instead of via pipeline. So to me, that's one of the most important elements. And we've talked about this before, but who uses the roadways? If we have more traffic on the roadways and more congestion, you don't know. It could be a carload of kids going to school. It could be a family going to church. And now we're trading one type of low probability risk for a greater risk in terms of public safety. And that's not talked about, but this all comes into play. And the last point I would make, there are definitely those out there who don't want fossil fuels to be used, period. That's just a reality. But my question is, then what else? Because we don't have the infrastructure in place currently to support a fleet of electric vehicles, for example, across the country, or a trucking fleet that's powered by electricity. We may get there at some point in time, but at what cost? There's a tremendous cost to society with that as well. And when you think of a low-income household, do they have $30,000 to $35,000 to buy an electric vehicle right now? Because they don't have access to low-cost petroleum products at the pump? And the answer is no, they don't. And they've been further pressured by a downturn in the economy due to COVID-19. So there are just so many different elements in play. And when we talk about regulatory certainty, and this was mentioned, but when we talk about regulatory certainty, that the federal judge, his decision undermines that type of regulatory certainty that I think industry deserves to have, and through no fault of their own, they are facing now, I think, an untenable situation in terms of trying to shut down the pipeline by August 5th. And there's certainly risk with trying to expedite that particular process. So I hope, as this has moved up to a higher court, the appellate court, that they rule that the pipeline can continue to operate while the EIS is conducted. I think that would be the prudent and fair thing to do without question, and then have the EIS conducted. That will be conducted, and we'll see what the outcome of that is. But it's very punitive to a number of entities that had no control over the process. And the process was correct. We worked with 27 agencies. And I wasn't here at the time, but the commission worked with 27 different agencies, including the Army Corps of Engineers. And it's up to them to conduct their vetting process, their review process, in the manner that they see fit. And then that's a requirement of the permit, that all those agencies gave the project a green light, which they did. So ultimately, it was lawfully cited, and to pull the rug out from the process as a whole at this point in time just isn't a responsible action. Okay, and on that happy note, obviously, a tremendous amount of frustration from a number of entities right now, and there's just a better way to go about this. So moving into the regular agenda, well, I'm going to back up a little bit. I move that we have 19 or 16 items on consent in the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, moving into the regular agenda, my first item. Believing there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest, and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the commission consolidate these cases for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04 and issue a Notice of Opportunity for Consolidated Hearing in Dakota Natural Gas LLC, Natural Gas Facilities, Trail County, Public Convenience and Necessity, Case Number PU-20-244, Dakota Natural Gas LLC, Gas Transportation, American Crystal Sugar Company, Tariff and Rates, Case Number PU-20-245, and Dakota Natural Gas LLC Natural Gas Service Trail County Tariff Case Number PU-20-246.
Second.
Okay, on June 1st of 2020, this year, Dakota Natural Gas filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate a natural gas system to parts of Trail County in North Dakota and to update their tariff to add the new service area in Trail County. And that would consist of two cases previously mentioned. Also on June 1st, 2020, Dakota Natural Gas filed a request for approval of a firm gas transportation agreement with American Crystal Sugar. And that would be the third case that was mentioned. The issues to be considered in these in 20-244, is there a need for service? Is Dakota Natural Gas technically, financially, and managerially fit and able to provide the service? What effect on other public utilities providing similar service will this have? And is the proposed service adequate? And on 20-245, the issues to be considered include what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on DNG's property, used and useful for service and convenience of the public in North Dakota. And are the rate schedules designed in such a manner that they result in a basis of charge to its customers that, again, is just and reasonable without discrimination? And lastly, the issues to be considered in 20-246, are the proposed changes reasonable? And is there other relevant information the commission should consider? Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by August 22, 2020. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And just a few points on this. This is the same company that provided service to Drayton and also to the American Crystal Sugar Plant in Drayton, North Dakota. This is very advantageous for not only the Drayton community. That case has been conducted, and now we're talking about the city of Hillsboro and the city of Mayville, as well as the American Crystal Sugar Plant that is located just north of Hillsboro, North Dakota. And there are significant advantages to this. Natural gas can run as much as half, and if not more, less in terms of cost to consumers than propane. And so we have a cheaper fuel source, and that is good not only for industry. And I would remind everyone that American Crystal Sugar is a cooperative. It's farmer-owned. It's an agricultural cooperative, and when they can reduce cost by changing fuel source, that's of benefit to the farming community in the valley in eastern North Dakota. So there's a significant advantage to making the move for them. And I did check to see, okay, so what's the average cost to heat a home if you're utilizing propane versus natural gas? Natural gas for an average home will run between $1,100 and $1,200 per year. Propane runs between $2,500 and $3,000 a year for the same home. So significantly less in terms of cost. Homeowners would have to retrofit an existing furnace, for example, if they're utilizing a propane fuel source, or if they would like to switch over a gas stove or a hot water heater, they would have to make adjustments to that. So there would be some cost, but the return on that investment would be fairly rapid and, again, advantageous to the consumers. But as we had talked about in our opening comments, the one thing that struck me when I was reviewing and looking at this, when you look at the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, that was an $8 billion project on the East Coast. That's been, as Commissioner Christman mentioned, has been abandoned by the company. When you look at the closure of Dakota Access Pipeline, that could certainly result and likely will result in reduced drilling in the Bakken. So not only less gas or oil being produced, but less gas being produced as well. And projections, I think when you look at the projections of what natural gas pricing will be over the next decade, I think that has to be reviewed once again. I don't think you have the same certainty, because if you can't move product to market and you have fewer producers, will there be adequate supply long term? So there could certainly be a negative impact in terms of the price advantage that natural gas currently offers. And about the time that you think that a status quo exists in terms of energy pricing, it can be turned on its head when you have rulings, as mentioned, with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, with Dakota Access, and then with Keystone XL. So it creates uncertainty, and I think the natural gas supply is still there's still an abundance of natural gas, but as these things are put in motion, we don't have the same certainty in terms of long-term projections that natural gas will, in fact, remain low. I believe it will, but this adds additional concern. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
This is a project that, I'm really excited to go through the review process on this. In my early years on the commission, I spent some time visiting various communities that didn't have natural gas service. And Hillsborough, Mayville, those were two that were high up on the list. And I'll never forget my discussions with the economic developer in Hillsborough, because she ticked off at least three or four businesses that they had lost because they didn't have natural gas service. At the time, there really wasn't an economical way, and the companies that were looking at it couldn't figure out how to get it there in a way that was economical. This company seems to have a formula for doing this. It's kind of proven in Minnesota, and they're now applying that in North Dakota. And they're in the early stages, so I guess, you know, we can't it's too early to judge the effectiveness, but it's got to be good enough for them to expand, because that's what they're doing here with this project, and it's really has some great potential opportunities for these communities. So I'm looking forward to the review process and discussing what they're seeing and their confidence in making this next extension and providing long-awaited natural gas to these communities.
Commissioner Christman?
I think it's been very thoroughly covered we're not approving the project yet. We still will have a fair hearing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have nothing more to add.
Okay. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, my next and final item, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery Tariff Case Number PU-20-259.
Second.
The origination of this was on June 5th, 2020, Northern States Power Company filed an application for approval of modifications to its transmission facility cost recovery rider. The tariff modification is intended to clarify the methodology used to annually true up the recovery of qualifying costs in the transmission facility cost recovery rider. Persons desiring a hearing, and I'll give a few more bullet points on what this is really about in layman's terms, but persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for a hearing must be received by August 22nd, 2020. This is really, I don't know if it would be accurate to say this is simply housekeeping, but as staff was working through the tariff language and comparing it to how the company was evaluating and calculating their rates for the transmission rider, they found some what I would call minor discrepancies, but nonetheless discrepancies in how the tariff language was written. This will clean up that tariff language to more accurately reflect the current process used to update the transmission rider and eliminate any possibility of what would be considered retroactive rate making, which we cannot do. So it's more of a proactive, I would say, as much as reactive versus reactive approach to this. And kudos to Victor Shook in particular for spotting this and wanting to make some changes and to fine-tune how the language is written. And most importantly, from a ratepayer standpoint, this will result in no changes to the rates. I don't want to diminish the importance of making these tweaks to language, but it's some I think prudent housekeeping that will be conducted, so or that it will accomplish. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I have no comments on this one.
Commissioner Christman?
Nor do I.
We have a motion and a second, and sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and that completes my portfolio. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Foxtel Wind LLC, Foxtel Wind Energy Center, Dickey County, citing application case number PU-17-284.
Second.
On January 31st of 2018, the Commission issued a certificate of site compatibility to Foxtel Wind LLC for the construction operation of 150-megawatt wind energy center and facilities in Dickey County. Later that year, that certificate was transferred to NSP. Subsequently, the legislature passed a requirement that all facilities permitted by the commission after June 5th of 2016, which this one was, must be equipped with a functioning light mitigating technology system by December 31st of 2019. So that made this facility subject to that requirement of having a functioning light mitigating technology in place by December 31st of 2019, which was last December. Our staff alleged a violation by NSP of this statute and the associated administrative law for failure to equip the Foxtel Wind Energy with the functioning light mitigating system by the deadline of December 31st of 2019. In January 9th, Foxtel Wind began commercial let us know that they had begun commercial operation on December 31st, but they need at least 2 to 3 weeks of additional time to complete the installation and testing of ADLS. In April of this year, April 8th of 2020, we received a letter from NSP that the ADLS at Foxtel became fully operational on April 7th. NSP and staff engaged in good faith settlement discussions, resulting in a consent agreement that we have in front of us today, which is intended to avoid further administrative proceedings or litigation. And in this consent agreement, NSP agrees to a civil penalty of $10,000 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission for not complying with the ADLS statute. So I want to thank the staff for their work on this issue. I know they were in close discussions with NSP throughout the spring on this issue, and I think this this consent agreement brings fair resolution to this issue. And this is the final one, final project that has been subject to these kind of potential penalties for not being compliant with the law. There's one more project that is still under construction and needs to be compliant, but they have said that they intend to have the and don't see any issues with having the technology in place upon their operations. So,
Commissioner Christman?
Not much to add, really. I guess the one kind of disappointing part of this process, or well, I guess the first disappointing part is when things don't get done as they were supposed to. But I was saddened initially when they missed the January 1st deadline and gave the assessment that they would need 2 to 3 weeks and then weren't done in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was kind of disappointing. But the most important thing is it's going now. This established the precedent for future companies that it's not a rule that can just be ignored. It's, you know, going to be enforced, And so hopefully they'll get it done on time rather than waiting and being tardy with implementation. So I think, as you said, this is a good resolution of the case.
I was disappointed in the fact that these companies have had a year and a half. They had 18 months from when this rule became effective, that they have light mitigating technology installed. They had a year and a half to complete this. And when you run up against deadlines and don't allow for shipping challenges, anything else that might come up, you're increasing the risk that you're not going to meet that particular deadline. So I think it sends the right message to industry, and it also helps uphold a promise made to the public that these facilities would not be lit at night and that the red lights would go away. So hopefully it sends the right message, and I believe it will, to developers and other wind facility owners that there's a second set that now have a deadline based on construction date to also have this system in place. And it's I know when I drive out to the ranch, I'm not going to miss driving through a corridor of blinking red lights at night, because I typically come back late on a Sunday evening. And once I get past Dickinson, all the way literally into Bismarck, it's blinking red lights on both sides of the interstate. So I look forward to that day when the night sky is, in fact, darkened again, as has been mentioned many times. So
we have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
I will, Mr. Chairman, just make one additional comment, and that is, I think the next step, and I'll be talking to staff about how to pursue this, is to set up a time to get a report from the companies that are using the technology, maybe use 6 months or 9 months, just to get a report from them on how often it's off, what triggers the lights to go on, and if they aren't able to keep track of that, maybe working with them to find a way that they can track that so we can better understand the effectiveness of the technology. Mm-hmm. So, because the worst thing is to promise that it's going to turn the lights off, to have the technology in place to do that, and then to not have the lights going off. So why would that be? That's the next thing. I think we want to make sure that the technology is actually doing what we think it's intended to do.
And I like that idea. I think it's very important that we do that. Because, to tell you the truth, after the early January implementation date of the one just immediately northwest of Mandan, in those first couple months when it was dark earlier in the evening, on none of my trips through there were the lights ever not flashing.
Right.
And, you know, in any given moment, you can assume that a plane must be in the air. But it's hard to imagine. There's always one real close by. Seemed like every moment on quite a few trips through, so I think that an assessment of it would be very valuable.
Yeah,
I think the public probably questions why they see some of the lights on, and this has been mentioned by Commissioner Fedorchuk many times. The two sets of deadlines based on construction dates. So it wasn't all of the wind facilities would have the technology in place by the end of 2019. What's the next deadline? Is it 2021? December 31st?
Yeah.
2021. So that's, I think, worth noting as well, that there's still work to do, but those companies are not out of compliance.
Okay. So moving to my next agenda item. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Dakota Prairie Refining LLC. Amend certificate number 151, permit number 162 and 163, citing application case number PU-20-263.
Second.
So this is an exciting, I'm just going to talk about this. So basically this is notice of opportunity for a hearing on this change that Dakota Prairie Refining wants to make to the use on a couple of the pipelines part of this facility. Comments and requests for a hearing on the matters must be received by August 10th of 2020. Identify what your issues are. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. So essentially, there's two pipelines that were permitted along with Dakota Prairie Refining, and that's a 6-inch naphtha line and an 8-inch atmospheric tower bottoms line. And that was what they were used to transport when they were first operating and first constructed. Now the company is changing what it's producing. They're going to cease refining of crude oil, and they're going to begin refining of soybean and corn oil into renewable diesel fuel. So this is a really progressive, innovative project, converting this existing infrastructure into a higher value added product. And in the process of doing that, they want to convert these two lines, the original 6-inch naphtha line, they want to convert that to transport the final product, the renewable diesel fuel, to the Dickinson Rail Terminal for further transport to market. And then they want to convert the 8-inch ATB line to a line that will be used to transport and liquid soybean oil into the facility. So, again, we have to talk to them about this. The lines will, according to their application, be operating below their highest permitted pressure and that sort of thing. We've never permitted lines for liquid soybean oil that I'm afraid of or aware of, or renewable diesel fuels. So that will be kind of fun to discuss with the company, at very least in an informal hearing, if we don't do a formal hearing. But again, I think it's a cause for potential celebration to see the industry adapting in this way. And meeting, there's huge demand in states like California for this product, renewable diesel fuel. I know that they're getting some tax credits as part of the whole project to make it pencil out from an economic standpoint. And so they can basically convert this soybean oil from North Dakota into a renewable diesel fuel, and for use in areas like California where they have mandates in place requiring the conversion of their transportation fleet to using renewable fuels. So, and then it's a double win for North Dakota because it is the marriage of our two leading industries, energy and agriculture. So very exciting to see our industries adapt and change and take advantage of all the new potential technological innovations occurring in this sector.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Nothing to add.
I would agree and I would concur. I think it's a tremendous value-added agricultural component that North Dakota can take advantage of. And I think when you are a soybean grower in North Dakota and you can put Ruby Red in your vehicle or utilize it on the farm, that just makes sense for a number of reasons. And I think I haven't heard it put that way before, but I think that is just perfect wording in terms of a marriage between our two leading industries.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Fedorchuk. Commissioner Chrisman.
Mr. Chairman, would it be all right to move RC3 to the top of the calendar?
So RC3 will become RC1, which would make RC1 RC2 and RC2.
Although they still have the same, the original numbers, but
got it.
That will be the order.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is the Northern Divide Wind LLC case. I move the commission approve the parent guarantee filed June 16, 2020 in Northern Divide Wind LLC, 200-megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center, Burke Decommissioning Plan and Cost, case number PU-20-270.
Second.
On June 16th of this year, Northern Divide Wind filed a construction financial assurance in the form of a parent guarantee with the commission. This is really the first step, and as these two cases go, you'll see the next one involves the second step in our decommissioning assurances system. So they filed this parent guarantee. This project is to be constructed in Burke County with a nameplate capacity up to 200 megawatts, including up to 74 installed turbines. Based on our rules, Northern Divide Wind filed their construction financial assurance for 5% of the total estimated construction cost, which is $15 million in this case. That $15 million is the 5%. NextEra Energy Capital Holdings Incorporated is the guarantor, and they have a credit rating in the A category from S&P Global Ratings. Therefore, they meet the commission's requirement to qualify to file a parent guarantee.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't have any comments on this one.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, now RC1, I move the commission approve the decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on June 15th, 2020 in Aurora Wind Project, LLC, Aurora Wind Project, Williams County, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-19-318.
Second.
So Aurora Wind is currently already under construction for approximately 299 megawatt wind facility. That'll be comprised of 71 turbines up in Williams County. The financial assurance equal to 5% of expected construction cost was submitted before construction commenced. And so that was the step that was similar to the one we just completed for Northern Divide, except in this case, they used a letter of credit rather than a corporate guarantee. So now Aurora is moving into that next stage. They anticipate their operational date is in the fourth quarter of 2020. So as required before becoming operational, Aurora filed a decommissioning plan and a cost estimate for approximately $13.9 million in total. And, of course, this is more than just taking down the turbines. It's roads and things like that. But to average it out based on the number of turbines in this case, it would average about $195,000 per turbine. Before going operational, though, they will also need to file financial assurances equal to or exceeding this cost estimate. Staff has reviewed Aurora's decommissioning plan and cost estimate and recommends approval, as do I.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
No comments.
The one thing I did notice about one of the first things I look at is the average per turbine. And at $195,000, I think Aurora Wind, the Aurora Wind project, that estimate is far closer to reality than some of the numbers that were initially turned in. So we're seeing these numbers go up. We want to make sure there's enough in terms of financial backing to fully decommission these facilities. So Commissioner Christman and the staff that you worked with, I think you did a very good job with this one.
And I will agree with that. I think maybe some of the earlier ones might have been on the low side. I will say this might be a combination of being a more accurate estimate, but these are also some of the biggest towers we're going to have out there, too. So they, even with a similar estimating process, would be higher. They're really big ones.
And I think it's fair to say that these numbers can and will be adjusted as they're reviewed going forward. So
right.
I think it's an excellent starting point. It might be the number. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just been tremendous work. And we talk about red lights, but at some point in time, these facilities, at least some of them, will be decommissioned in all likelihood. So,
we have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and finally, RC2, different subject, but the same neighborhood. I move the commission execute a contract with Agassi Concrete Pumping LLC of Bismarck, North Dakota, in the amount of $406,750 for pumping foamed sand, pressurized grouting, and the drilling for the 2020 Noonan Foam Sand AML project.
Second.
In March of this year, our AML division issued a request for proposals for this project. It involves pumping foam sand and pressurized grout into underground mine workings that are located on game and fish property, which is adjacent to a highway near Noonan. The foam sand is a relatively new method of backfilling underground mines. It has been used successfully in Colorado and Wyoming. Foam sand could even potentially save on the cost of underground mine reclamation. It eliminates the need for cement and fly ash that are our standard grout mix design requirements. And I would just add that the fly ash comes from the GRE plant, which is the one that works for that. And it would be, the fly ash is different at the other plants in North Dakota. So that is a potential problem too. But that's certainly not the only reason for trying this new method. This method can also be used in more remote locations than our previous components. The components in this case are a foaming surfactant, sand, and water, and they are safe for the environment. The AML division estimates that the project will require 1,000 tons of foamed sand in this case and 500 cubic yards of grout to fill the subsurface voids. The drilling and coring will be done as needed to verify the placement of the foamed sand and grout. The RFP procedures were used. Two offers were submitted by the May 7th deadline, and based on the scoring of our evaluation criteria, the evaluation committee selected this offer from Agassi Concrete Pumping in the amount of $406,750. There was a notice of intent to award a contract to Agassi that was issued on June 2nd. No protests were received. We've now received a signed contract, the performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and all the other materials that we requested. And so the AML division, I'll just also emphasize, has sufficient funds in our current OSM grants for this and the other projects that we have planned for 2020.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. In terms of announcements, we do have an informal hearing at 1:30 today. It is for Baldwin Wind, LLC, Wind Energy Center. That will be conducted at 1:30, again, p.m. today, both at the commission hearing room and then also via telephone and video as well, I believe, Steve. And access information to the informal for anyone who would like to watch would be posted on the PSC website. Is that right on the homepage?
Yes.
So it's very easy to find, and anyone interested in watching that proceeding can certainly do so. Tuesday, July 21st, we have a formal hearing that will be at 8 o'clock a.m., and that is a damage prevention enforcement case, and it's an enforcement formal hearing with Verindri Electric Co-op. So that is, again, Tuesday, July 21st, 8 a.m., and our next regular commission meeting is on Thursday, July 23rd at 10 a.m. So that would conclude the announcements. We will now take a brief recess and take questions, any questions from the press, followed by possibly a short break, and then we'll get into the administrative portion of the meeting. This meeting is now in recess.